the reason that you and I have this emotion of loneliness is because it's useful, right? It shouldn't be shameful. It's simply a signal. It's a signal that you and I belong together and that we're better together. And kind of think of it as the same experience as like hunger, right? When you experience hunger, that's your biological cue to go seek nourishment. Same thing when we experience loneliness, that's your biological cue to go seek connection.
This is Bridging the Gap with your host, Matt Reiner.
Ryan Jenkins, welcome to Bridging the Gap. Thanks so much for joining me. We should have done this in person. You're just down the street. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, Matt.
Good, man. I mean, heck, we could have met up, you know, middle of the road here in Atlanta and Midtown and done it like off-site at like a Starbucks or something. It may have been too loud.
Yeah, but, and it's a decently, weather's decent, so we could have been outside. Yeah, we should have done that next time.
Next time. We'll have you follow up and, you know, we'll do it again. We're talking, you know, pre-podcast. It's not going to be a Tim Ferriss long style episode, but maybe we'll do one in person next time. But
sure.
Dude, as I was mentioning early on, I'm really stoked about this podcast. I think that, you know, the research that you've done, the book you've written called Connectable is super interesting. I think that it touches on a lot of things that I am a proponent of making more people aware of, especially in this industry. So we'll talk about loneliness. We'll talk about connection. I just think that there's so much that value that we can learn about it. And I think it's in a good way of how to make progress. So I'm really stoked about that. But before we get into talking about this specific topic, I'm curious, what did the 13-year-old Ryan Jenkins want to be when he grew up?
I think I wanted to be a stuntman and just, I really loved movies and I always loved, you know, doing wild antics and wild tricks when I was little. And so, yeah, go back and ask that little boy, I'd be a stuntman back then.
That's incredible. Like you're more adventurous than me. I'm still scared of roller coasters. So I don't know if I'd be a great stuntman. They're like, go jump off the building. I'd be like, no chance. So going from stuntman, 13-year-old Ryan Jenkins, to now you're focusing on team dynamics, generational dynamics. Like, where did this come from? Like, tell us the journey from 13-year-old you to today you and how you got into this area.
Yeah, I grew up in Denver, Colorado, went to Miami University in Ohio, and I studied entrepreneurship. And so I knew I wanted to start my own business at some point, but that led me to actually getting a job, having an entrepreneurial degree. And that took me to Atlanta. And again, I knew I wanted to do something, didn't know what it was. And at one point, I remember asking myself, I read this somewhere, and I asked myself, when in my life was I affirmed for something that I was good at? When in life was I affirmed for something that I was good at? And I thought, gosh, what has that been? Because I think it's human nature to get affirmation and we quickly blow by it, right? We don't give it a second thought. We're always more focused on the negative. And I just started thinking, when was I affirmed for certain things? And it was when I was speaking in front of large groups that I always got a lot of really good feedback saying, this was good. This was exceptional, in fact, you know? And so I kind of figured out all those were things I wanted to explore. And so I began exploring public speaking and then I wanted to figure out, hey, what is a topic that I could weigh in on? And I started with the generational conversation. At the time, the topic around millennials was really piping hot and everyone was focused on it. And being a millennial myself, I figured I wanted to lend my voice and more think of it from the lens of how can we all work better together? And I really thought the millennials was kind of a signpost of this kind of next evolution of work. And so I weighed in there and started writing about generations. And then it was when I was writing a book about Gen Z, which is the youngest generation and now entering the workforce, that I began bumping into all this research saying that how they're the most isolated, disconnected, lonely generation we've ever seen. In fact, 79% of Gen Z report sometimes or always feeling lonely, which is the most of any generation. And that's when I really was like, wow, we've got to figure out this. And that's when my work began to shift and more focus on team connection and how can we cultivate more connection at work so that we could help this next generation as they enter the workforce. Turns out we're all experiencing more disconnection and isolation and loneliness than ever before, no matter our generation. It's still most acute amongst the emerging generations, but that's how my work has evolved. And now here we are today.
So I want to jump into this loneliness topic in a second. But before I do, I want to touch on something you just talked about there is you've done a lot of work on generations. You know, I think that, you know, I'm intrigued or I'm interested in your perspective of has every generation gone through what kind of the boomers are going through when they look at millennials like, they're just young and naive and like, they don't know what they're doing. And like, they're doing something different. Like the boomers were in that situation before when the generation prior to them were in the position they are today. And I somewhat feel, because I'm a millennial as well, I somewhat feel that the millennials get a bad rap just because we're different. But I think that the boomers were different in a different way as well. Did you find that in your research? Is there something like true? There's differences, but is there like something really like, is this an anomaly of a generational divide? Or is this just the commonality, but we only experience it really once in each position, so it seems new to us every time?
No, you're right. Generational differences and generational friction has been around since as long as we've documented things in written form. You can look back as far as Socrates, and he has been quoted as calling the emerging generations lazy and disrespectful. So this has been a cyclical thing, and I wouldn't have been interested in studying generations pre the internet, because if you think pre the internet, there's not a ton that was shaping and shifting human behavior. But post the internet and all these wonderful technologies and all the things that we have at our disposal now, it's rapidly shifting markets and human behavior. And so now it's really helpful to look at the generational differences, because they give us insights into what to expect in the future. But I'd say one of the things that's really at the crux of this is for the first time ever, we have an emerging generation that has skills and knowledge that previous generations don't have. Mm. That's never happened before. Because we've always passed down skills and knowledge from one generation to the next generation to the next generation. And so that's why we're seeing this generational friction amplified and really turned up, because now, again, we have Gen Z and millennials were really kind of the first generation that came in that had, again, knowledge and skills coming in from the digital age that previous generations didn't understand. And that was causing all kinds of tension and friction. And that will continue as more and more innovations continue to come around the corner and new generations are born into those technologies and those waves of innovation, and they develop new expectations and attitudes and skill sets. So the goal is never to stamp out generational differences, because we'll never be able to do that. The goal is to leverage the tension that exists amongst those generations, or amongst those differences, excuse me, so that we can create stronger, more resilient teams. But yeah, to your point, it's not new, but there's definitely new elements that are causing more generational friction than ever before.
I want to dive into that tension to create stronger, resilient teams, or leverage the tension, right? I want, if you can tap into that for a second, but I also want to ask as well, do we think that because the millennials and were really the first ones into technology as it is today, like, is the difference between millennials and like go even the generation, the next generation that's going to be born, you know, in the few years that's going to be in technology, is it going to be more similar to, because the gap between millennials and boomers is so high because boomers didn't experience technology like millennials did. So that was such a big gap. But is that gap going to shrink because millennials have an understanding of technology and like you would need another revolution like technology, even if it's AI that still involves technology and there's still understanding of it. Is that just going to continue to contract in future generations? So it may not be as big of a gap in the decades to come. And then we can tap into tensions, and then we'll go into loneliness. I mean, we'll get to loneliness, yeah. I promise.
this is teeing it up, because I think this is all kind of setting the foundation of why we're experiencing a lot of this disconnection and loneliness. But yeah, it's a great question, and I don't know if I'll answer it, but I think this is helpful to consider, and that is that the generational spans are shrinking. So typically, the generational spans were 15 to 20 years, which made sense because that was a natural step in our ancestry. But because things are moving so quickly now, new innovations and technology can imprint large cohorts of folks that are in those multiple age ranges all around the world. So we're likely going to see those 15 to 20 year spans shrink down to 10, maybe even 5 year spans. And I think a good indication, a good example of this is the millennial generation. It's a large generation, and you have these older millennials that really think and act and have different expectations than younger millennials. And so they're very different, but yet they're in one generation. So I joke, but the dividing line between those two older and younger millennials is those that did play and did not play Oregon Trail. And it's... Yeah, I mean, it's kind of tongue in cheek. And of course, if you get that joke, then you know exactly what I'm talking about. But what it really underscores here is that if you did play the Oregon Trail like myself, I'm an older millennial. That means I didn't grow up with mobile technology and social media. But the younger generation, younger millennials who didn't play Oregon Trail, they didn't have access to they did have access to social media and mobile technology. So why would they bother with Oregon Trail? And even that subtle difference is coming of age with very different tools and technology has shaped how they educate, how they buy, how they communicate, all these things. And so while sometimes the innovations might be subtle, I think the ramifications can be larger. It's hard to imagine where AI is going to take us and how it's going to imprint this generation, but no doubt those generational spans will shrink and we'll start seeing different and different behaviors as a result of it.
You know, it's interesting as you're talking, what made me resonate because I was an Oregon Trail guy as well.
Nice.
Yeah, you know, so I, where in the world is Carmen Sandiego, all that stuff, right? Yeah. It's kind of like there's going to be technology is exponential, but it's going to also magnify differences within generations. So I kind of see like generations now looking more like an org chart than a kind of a flat line, like horizontal organization, right? You're going to have a millennials and you're going to have sub millennial A, sub millennial B, and then you have Gen Z, and then you're going to have sub and then even sub inside of there because technology is going to magnify because of the speed of change. It's just going to magnify the differences. So I love that idea that the spans are going to become smaller and I think even just create subgroups, which is super interesting, which is going to become difficult. And, you know, I think that this is a good transition into loneliness because loneliness, mental health is something that I'm passionate about. I think that it's not talked about enough. It's impacting everybody. I think that some older generations look at it as something just that's impacting only the newer generations, but it's impacted everybody. It's just now we're more aware of it. And I think that technology is one of the impetuses to it. Is creating it. It's creating more connectiveness, but it also has created that there's pros and cons of that. But I think it's a real topic. And that's why I wanted to dig into it because I think you've done so much research on it. And, you know, you think about loneliness, just going back to 2013 was an integral year, right? Because that was the year that we finally got to the point where the majority of people had a smartphone. The majority of humans had a smartphone. And if you then go and look at the searches, like there's average on going back a steady rate of like 100,000 plus searches of Google just for the topic of loneliness. And then you think about depression, it's even higher. And like you go and quick scan, if you don't think that there's loneliness issues, like just go scan a Reddit feed on depression or loneliness. And it's like, it wakes you up that there's something there. And I think businesses have an opportunity to really help in that. So before we get into that, I just want to start really basic because I don't know if people really understand. I think they have a visual image of what loneliness is, but I don't know if they truly understand like what is loneliness? How would you describe loneliness to someone? Because some people are probably like, hey, I'm lonely at times, but it's not that big of a deal. But like, what is true loneliness when you say like 73% or 69% of the workforce, whatever it may be, 72% of the workforce is lonely? What does that mean? What is loneliness?
Yeah, I think a really helpful definition of loneliness is the following, that it is not the absence of people, but it's the absence of connection. And it's when we feel like we should be connecting with others, but we're not, right? So there's kind of this hole in us. And the reason that you and I have this emotion of loneliness is because it's useful, right? It shouldn't be shameful. Unfortunately, in our world, it's a very shameful emotion, which we've been trying to do our part to overcome that because it shouldn't be shameful. It's simply a signal. It's a signal that you and I belong together and that we're better together. And kind of think of it as the same experience as like hunger, right? When you experience hunger, that's your biological cue to go seek nourishment. Same thing when we experience loneliness, that's your biological cue to go seek connection. And so it's no wonder we have this emotion and it's a helpful emotion. And I think why it's starting to get a lot of traction is we're seeing it escalate very quickly. Pre-pandemic, it was growing. All of us were experiencing more and more loneliness. The amount of close confidants and friends that people say they have is dwindling quickly. That was happening pre-pandemic. Then the pandemic put a big spotlight on it. And we still continue to dance around the topic. But the other part of this too is we don't have a lot of science around it. Just in the last about 7 to 8 years is where we've actually figured out where loneliness shows up in our brain. And we're just starting to figure out the physical ramifications of experiencing isolation and loneliness. So this is, while it's emotion that's universal to humanity, and we've always had it, we're just now getting our hands around it from a science perspective. And hopefully that's going to help us kind of accelerate us talking about it, learning how we can handle it and make sure that it's not wrecking our physical and mental well-being. And the last thing I'll say too is, connection is our most significant need as humans. And this is according to the longest study of adult development done by Harvard University called the Study of Adult Development. They studied over 2,000 humans throughout their whole lives. And they've done this for over 80 years. And they found it's not wealth or status or sleep or diet. It's the quality of your social connection that leads to the longest, most healthy lives. And so, again, we understand as humans that social connection is important, but we are wildly, wildly underestimating how important it is.
Yeah, we downplay it because we're like, ah, it's fine, but it's evolutionary. And I want to talk about that in a second. But I want to pose this question because as you were talking about loneliness is the absence of connection, not the absence of people, is kind of what you mentioned. You know, I think about some people listening and they're like, well, you know, I've got tons of connection. Like I see my friends every minute because I'm on Instagram every single minute. Like I know what they're doing. I'm connected to them. Like I'm more connected to them than I've ever been. Why is there more loneliness now than ever before? Like is social media not quote unquote connection? Is it the wrong type of connection or is it, and we're just not perceiving it the right way? Because I think a lot of people are like, older people, millennial or you know, baby boomers, like I'm more connected to my kids than I ever been, but they're still lonelier than they've ever been, probably. So where is the disconnect happening?
Yeah, oh, great question. And yeah, loneliness is not the absence of people, it's the absence of connection. So your listeners can relate. You've been in a crowded office, you've been to a crowded conference before, and you're surrounded by tens, if not hundreds of people. But if you don't have connection with those individuals, you can still feel isolated and disconnected. In fact, it can exasperate the problem, right? If someone's feeling very lonely and disconnected, and they're thinking, let me just get around people, and they just go somewhere and they're just with other people. But again, there's no one that's looking at them or addressing them. They can feel even more disconnected from their tribe or community. Mm. And so it's really, we have to be intentional about forging these connections. And to your point, most people fall into the trap that, yeah, we're more connected. I'm using air quotes, connected than ever, but that is false. There's a big, big, big difference between communication and connection. Those two things are not the same thing. So when we communicate, that's the exchanging of information. We process that in the front part of our brain. Whereas when we connect, that's the ease of communication between people. It's the sense of feeling seen and heard in a conversation. And then we actually process that in the back part of our brain. So a good way to think of it is if you've ever texted, I love you to a significant other, you could text them that all day, which is wonderful. We should probably all be doing more of that to more people than we already are. But that is just communication. It doesn't become connection until you hear the tone and that sentiment. They see your body language. They feel your embrace. That's when it becomes connection. And so a good way to think about this is communication is dealt, but connection is felt. And while we should continue to use all these wonderful pieces of technology that we have, but we cannot continue to keep making the same mistake thinking that we're connected when in reality, we're just communicating. We're just pushing around information. And so what our soul needs is actually to get with people and to be in connection deeply with others. And so, yeah, that's where we're falling short is we like to call it social snacking. So with all these social media apps and technology, Reddit you mentioned, that's just us social snacking. So we're just keeping our loneliness levels at a non-chronic level, and it's just allowing us to socially snack, which isn't fully nourishing. We need to actually meet with someone in person or have a really in-depth or meaningful conversation over the phone or Zoom or something else to where we're actually connecting with that individual. So there's a big difference there, and it's important that we understand those differences and not keep relying on these tools that are really starting to pull us apart like never before.
I mean, I love that analogy. I think I got it right. If communication's dealt and connection's felt, I think that's like, there's something to be said. And I was reading in a book, actually, The Organized Mind recently, and it was talking about how the forms of communication are now so simple. It's more talking about like how email, you don't have to like, there's no thought that has to go into email. The impact isn't as great. Like I can waste your time by sending you tons of emails. Where in the past, like I had to write out, and I had to be really thoughtful because I was like, it's going to take me another week before Ryan gets the next letter. And that's when like poems and letters like had meaning and connection. Now everybody's like, they try putting an email. Email just doesn't have that because it's such a low barrier of a communication and it's so quick. It doesn't have that connection like we used to. So technology has made it easier to communicate, but harder to connect in that sense. And I'm curious, and this is asking for me. I'm not even saying I'm asking for a friend. Like I'm a perfectionist, and I'm, you know, there's always that constant of like, I feel lonely, like there's something wrong. Is there anybody, have you, in all of your research, ever experienced someone that's never experienced loneliness in their life?
No, it's a universal human condition. We all experience it.
And so with that being said, then just being aware that it can happen and not trying to avoid it. So then I guess the next question is, all right, everybody's experience. It's a human condition. It's a connection issue, right? I then look at, you know, I did some research on a blog post that I wrote a while ago of why I believe that the human financial advisor is never going away, despite all the evolutions in technology. It's because of connection. Because doing it on your own, you become lonely. Like there's only one person to talk to, and it's yourself. And there's loneliness. And to your point, you know, loneliness there, it impairs, you know, all these studies. It has adverse health conditions. I'll just, you know, for the listeners, it has adverse health conditions from depression, poor sleep quality, impaired executive function, accelerated cognitive decline. Like loneliness has all these effects. So you always are trying to figure out why. It may be something that you're trying to avoid, which is loneliness. You just have no lack of connection. But the one that I always thought was interesting was executive function, which to your point was the brain. You're talking about the brain. It was like it impacts the frontal lobe, which the frontal lobe is so necessary to accomplish financial outcomes, right? And that because that impacts like your executive functions, like capacity to plan, organize, or your response to achieve a goal, like all those types of things. So I'm curious from your research, like to build on that. When you are lonely, what's happening behind the scenes in the brain that's causing us to do things that we then try to fix because we try to do something tangentially of saying like, hey, it's an action that happened or it's something, you know, someone was mean to us, so that's why. But actually it's something in our brain psychologically that's happening. What is happening in periods of loneliness that people can be aware of that they may be unaware of today?
Yeah, think back to our ancestors who roamed the plains. I mean, when you got excluded from the tribe, your survival rate plummeted. I mean, there was strength in numbers, and we still understand that today, that there is strength in numbers. We could pull each other's resources. We could watch each other's back. We could, you know, leverage each other's strengths. So there was strength in numbers. And again, excluded from the group, survival rate plummeted. So back then, your ancestor who found themselves alone in the forest, their brain is on hyper threat surveillance, right? Their whole body is in a heightened stress state because they're fighting for their survival. So they're listening for the smallest snap of a twig to then put themselves in a fight or flight. So whether you know it or not, disconnection and loneliness was deadly back then. It is just as debilitating today as it was back then. Our body still functions in the same state where if we feel detached from our team or our community or our family members or neighbors, our body is in that hyper threat surveillance to when we start overanalyzing everything around us. And what's tricky about loneliness is it starts to compound, right? You start to overanalyze, you start to read in between the lines, and you begin distrusting more people around you, thus turning more and more inward. And so it's a really tricky emotion. We have to get our hands around it and make sure that this doesn't happen because we're only as connected as our most disconnected community or team members. And unfortunately, someone who's disconnected from the tribe, they won't proactively pull themselves back into the tribe. It takes the team to proactively pull that individual back in. And so this is why it's important for all of us to have this conversation. So I hope no one's checking out thinking, well, I don't experience loneliness or that's not me. Someone around you is experiencing it. And according to the data too, 90% of employees that are suffering from isolation or disconnection say they would not tell their supervisor. So anyone listening, make the assumption someone on your team or in your community is experiencing this and they need your help. And it doesn't have to be, you know, really dramatic. There's some really simple ways I'm sure we'll talk about on how to pull folks back in. But back to your question, our brain and our body goes into a stress state when we feel disconnected. And I think having conversations like these are really important. The awareness is the first step. If you talk to a therapist or a psychologist, they'll tell you awareness is curative. As soon as we understand this and we start to feel it in our body or we start to understand, hey, I am feeling a sense of loneliness, then that's your first cue to go take some actions into getting more connected.
There's a lot of good points in there that I want to touch on. And I think that's why I also wanted to debunk it and asking for me is like, has anybody ever not felt lonely? So if you're saying, well, I don't feel lonely, like I'm really good. Like let's call a spade a spade. That's BS because there's times where we are disconnected. And then we are feeling lonely and there's an impact on our work and there's an impact on our presence. There's an impact on our ability to accomplish goals. And so understanding how to deal with loneliness, but then also helping our other team members, if we're not dealing with it, likelihood, if we're with two people, the other person is based on the statistics and based on the odds. And so we can help them. What I found really interesting, what you just said was, from an evolutionary standpoint, if you're disconnected, it's not up to that person. The likelihood for them to go back into the group is low. It's up to the group to then bring them back in. And what I've perceived, maybe just tangentially and just like observing, and maybe I've been wrong on it, is that when groups, especially teams, see that someone's not participating, not connecting, that they're like, that person's just a bad apple. And in reality, they should be focusing on themselves and saying, how can we must be doing something wrong to not connect with that person. Let's figure that. Is that a fair analysis that we should be looking internally if we're like part of the group, if we feel connected to the group and we see that someone's not, as opposed to saying that they're not, trying to find a way to get them to be connected, figure out why they're not connected and bring them back in because they're likely not going to bring themselves back in themselves?
Yeah, it's fair to assume that we should always be, and that's why we titled the book Connectable. We should all be connectable. We should have, it's similar to being teachable, right? You approaching things with a spirit of being, of learning new things. Same thing as with connectability, right? You have this, you're approaching life and work environments or teams with this idea of connectability. I'm always looking to be connected myself, to connect others. We should constantly be on the search for this because we need it that much and we're avoiding it that much. So we have to be really proactive about it. But I think what would be helpful here to share on the heels of your latest question is we interviewed Dr. Stephen Cole, who's a professor out of UCLA, who actually studies loneliness at the molecular level. And he was sharing with us that there's, when your brain lights up, when your brain goes into a threat circuitry, there's only one way to overcome that threat circuitry. So for example, let's say your house is on fire. Your brain is going to go turn on that threat circuitry and you're going to flee from that situation. That's a healthy brain. That's what our bodies are wired to do. But, you know, again, to override that threat circuitry. And again, that's what happens when you're experiencing isolation or loneliness is, again, you're in that fight or flight state. The only way to overcome that is with something with meaningful dependability. And so, again, you want to flee from that building. But if you have a family member or a pet inside that building, you will override your threat circuitry and run back into that building. So the same is true on a team, right? If we want to, if that person is disconnected, and again, they're going to be in that threat circuitry, they're trying to think of ways in which to not engage and perhaps look for a different job and continuously disconnect. The only way to override the threat circuitry in their brain is to engage them in something meaningful and to know that they're dependent on, you know, the group is dependent on their contribution. And so what Steve Cole recommends is just four words, simply telling that person, I need your help. That's it. Hey, I need your help. You are a valued team member. Get on the bus. We're going after this big, hairy, audacious goal. We need you on the team. We need your help. And so something as simple as that, right, is this four words that unlock that threat circuitry and gets folks moving back towards the group to create stronger teams. So just simple things like this, right? We don't have to jump in and say, are you lonely? You know, we don't have to go to that degree. There's small tactics we can use in order to create stronger teams.
I think that that's the biggest thing because like, it seems like it's like taboo to talk about loneliness because it's like, I'm not a therapist. Like I think that that's like a line I shouldn't cross. So I'm not going to cross it as a leader or a manager because I can't ask like, are you lonely? But there are ways that you can kind of, if you perceive that and you have that feeling that you can work to tactically overcome that and more connection is not going to be a bad thing anyways. If you're connected, I don't think unless I'm completely off, it doesn't seem like there's a negative to more connection. You know, I think that also for some of those that are people that are going through a period of feeling lonely or someone comes to them and says, hey, I'm just like feeling really disconnected. You wrote an article in Psychology Today. I found it super interesting that had some like layout of points. Like speaking of loneliness, You compared it to an astronaut, and I think her name was Christina Koch, who has the record for the longest female to stay in space over consecutive days, and it was like 328 days or something like that. It was something crazy. Like, yeah. Talk about loneliness, like being up in space, like 200 plus miles away, like loneliness. But you learn from what she did and what astronauts do in space to keep from loneliness that you then were able to say bring back to Earth. Can you talk about those from the aspect of, you know, regimentation, precise problem solving, and clear direction, and how we can use those both individually and also as leaders to help others overcome some aspects of loneliness by providing, you know, nudging them in some of these directions.
Yeah, you're right. Christina Koch is really extraordinary, and she has spent the most consecutive days in outer space of any female astronaut on planet Earth. And Yeah, when we were studying loneliness and isolation, we thought, what better group to study than those that spend really extreme amounts of time and extreme levels of isolation in the International Space Station. And so when we asked Christina Koch about, hey, you know, how do you deal and how do you ward off isolation and feelings of loneliness? And her response floored us. She simply said, clear direction, knowing what's required of me. And I think we don't think of connection in these terms. And again, loneliness is not the absence of people. It's the absence of connection. And I think one of those connections you got to think about is connection to the work you're doing, the things that you're involved with on a daily basis. And that's what she's getting at there is if I know what's you know, the mission of the organization, right, safely up and safely down, back down to Earth, you know, that helps in keeping me engaged and kind of staying true to the mission. And then every day kind of knowing what's my routine and what's expected of me. And how this played out in a very tangible way, one of the leaders we profiled in our books, she had just become, she was leading about an organization of about 1,000 people. And every person inside that organization has what she would call a responsibilities statement. So it's not a job description, right? A job description is really lengthy of all the things you got to do. But at the end of the day, each person had a one sentence responsibility statement. So at the end of the day, that was their clear direction where if all else was failing and they felt like it was overwhelming and they were starting to detach from the reality and the organization and what was expected of them, they could smash the emergency glass and grab that responsibility statement and go, aha, this is at least what I need to do and make sure this ball doesn't drop today. And the really strong example, more specifically, is for all the interns in the organization, their responsibility statement was simply, do what's asked of you and ask lots of questions. Do what's asked of you and ask lots of questions. And so again, think about a Gen Zer who's, you know, more prone to be isolated and lonely than any other generation coming in an organization. And we've all been there. First time in an organization, it can be very isolating because you don't have a lot of social capital. You don't know the industry. You don't know the ins and outs of the organization. But what a great way to ground someone and connect them to the organization with a very simple responsibility statement. And so that's exactly what those Gen Zers had. And it's a great way to kind of, again, cultivate that sense of connection and not have people drift off into outer space without a roadmap.
You know, the one aspect that you talked about with regards to connection to a vision, right? I think that that's super important. That connection is to a purpose. Like that's why, you know, Simon Sinek always talks about the why and why having a why is so important. Is you have a connection to something. That's why people are more connected to Patagonia and Apple than they are to Microsoft and Dell necessarily, because like, or Columbia brand of clothing, right? It's because they have a purpose. There's a why. There's something to connect to that I can tangibly hold. And I think, you know, what I found interesting in that article was the quote that you had from the former Walmart CEO, Carter Cass, about being lonely when he was scaling and not knowing if he was doing it right. I could resonate to that. When I was running our technology business, like I had no clue what I was doing, but I did my best effort and it was so lonely. No matter how many people I surrounded myself with, I always remember talking to my wife about it and saying, you know, I just don't have anybody that I can really talk to this about. I can't connect to anybody. Like I had a lot of people in my sphere and I was always wondering why was I feeling so lonely? And like, that's one of the reasons why it's lonely at top, because it's like, you can't talk to many people about that. Like they can't relate to that level. And so I'm curious in those positions, when you're in a position doing something new, something different, maybe you're on an island trying to do a new initiative or you're running a business, like it very much is lonely at the top. What can people do? Because it's not just a matter of surrounding yourself with people. You have a reason or a purpose of where you're going, but you still feel lonely. What's going on in that area and how can people overcome that in that period of time?
Yeah, I think it's something important to keep a note here is there's a big difference too between isolation and loneliness, right? Those are different things. So the isolation is kind of the overarching conversation that we're having here. And then from that stems loneliness and solitude. So loneliness is kind of the negative emotion that we experience when we're isolated, whereas solitude can be a very positive emotion. And we talk at length in the book about solitude, specifically for leaders, as you're mentioning, it's really important to actually nurture that connection with oneself. Because too often we have to kind of separate ourselves from the noise or the daily grind or the industry or market and look beyond, right? And start to cast vision for our team. And solitude can really help facilitate a lot of that. But again, loneliness isn't the absence of people, it's the absence of connection. So connection with oneself is really important. So that's something that leaders can keep in mind, and don't beat yourself up for wanting to experience solitude or carving out time for solitude. And how I would define solitude, you can experience it in a crowded coffee shop. It's when one's own thinking is self-directed. So as long as you're not being influenced by outside people or thoughts or opinions, you can experience solitude in a very positive way. So that's one way to think about it. The other way, and to your point, it's lonely at the top oftentimes because people don't know where that line is, and they don't want to become too close to someone and then not have to, you know, have to let that person go, or if they promote them, that there's some favoritism happening. So it can be tricky for folks, but you know, it doesn't have to, you know, I think people again get this idea of connection very tangled. And I'll give you a really simple example of how this looks for one team. They spent 5 minutes for every team call once a week. They spend 5 minutes at the top of that team call where one person on the team shares one non-work related picture for just 5 minutes. So the example they shared with us is one person shared the picture of their marathon training. And again, they did this virtually and in person. And someone shared, "Hey, I actually trained for marathons, and this is me, you know, training for my latest marathons." They'd worked with this person for years and they had no idea she ran marathons. And now they could start to see the human behind the job. And very simple. It doesn't take more than 5 minutes. And it allows everyone, including the leader, to take a step forward to really understand the context and more about that individual. So we're just talking about simple tactical things like that that can really help, you know, connect folks. And then, of course, there's all kinds of other ways in which to experience connection in meaningful ways. But I can relate with what you shared there too, Matt, as a keynote speaker, one that travels, you know, I do 60-70 events a year. It can be very isolating on the road. And I plug into associations like National Speakers Associations, and I've got masterminds with fellow keynote speakers where we can bounce these ideas off, because it's a weird world that I operate in. And having someone that knows exactly what I'm going through can be really helpful. But those are just a few ideas and kind of what's going on as it relates to your question.
I love that example you shared about the company, about just sharing like for 5 minutes at the beginning of a meeting. And that's where I wanted to go next, because I know we've referenced it multiple times in your book, Connectable. You mentioned that 72% of the workplace is impacted by loneliness. And, you know, I'm curious about strategies that companies can do, because I can feel the feedback and the uncomfortableness of this conversation. That's why I love this conversation, because we need to be a little bit uncomfortable. Is that they're like, well, it's not my spot to go and deal with mental health for my employees, but I would say that you deal with health insurance. Like you're providing them the opportunity to go get prescriptions and the doctors that they can go see. Like you're controlling that. So why can't we step into mental health? Because it seems uncomfortable, where we have to start getting really personal with people. And I'm curious on, like, from a leader standpoint, someone that wants to go and create more connectedness within an organization, what are steps that can be done to where you can ease into it? But you may never even get to the point of therapy. I mean, you probably shouldn't necessarily in the business. You maybe provide outlets, but, you know, like that idea of sharing about the people. But someone's like, we already do that. Like, we're a really close-knit group. Like, but we still have people that are lonely. So how do we then overcome that? And people may not be connected to the mission of the business. And so, like, is that just the point of saying, hey, you're not right for the business? Or is there something that we can do as a business to better those people?
Yeah, you're so right. And I think the case we made for stepping into mental health is the following, that I view it as like this. Like, if you come into work and you have a bleeding appendage, you're not getting any work done, right? You need to tend to that wound before you can show up fully and give your full attention to your colleagues and clients, et cetera. Like, you have to tend to that wound. Same is true when we're experiencing loneliness. Like, our body is in that threat circuitry. We're in that stress state. We can't think of anything else until we deal with that issue. The other analogy I use, I have young kids, but if we're on a road trip and one of my kids has to use the restroom, like, that's it. That's all they can think about. And that's all we hear until that problem is addressed. And same is true for those that are coming into the office that are struggling with their mental health. They're distracted at best and debilitated at worst. And so what's challenging is we can't see this. We can't see actually how they're doing. And so that's why we need to be very proactive about building cultures of connectability, so that we can start to mend some of these things, so we can show up more fully for our colleagues and clients. You know, we talked about a number of ways to do that, right? Simply saying, "I need your help." Something like sharing 5 minutes at the top of a meeting, a picture of that's not related to work. We also talked about getting clear direction and being very specific about responsibility statement or the roles or responsibilities of someone inside the organization or on the team. We also talked about trading communication for connection, right? Where can you trade a virtual meeting for an in-person meeting, for a text message for a phone call, or can you trade a statement for a question? These are all subtle ways. But one of the goals we've had was we've actually developed an assessment that actually measures how strongly connected teams are. And so it's the first empirically validated assessment that actually quantifies it. Because to your point, if we can't see these mental health struggles, we don't know if where they're at or where we can help. And same thing with connection is we can't measure it, unfortunately, or at least we haven't been able to in the past. So we're trying to help a lot of organizations really quantify that and identify where there's some gaps when it comes to connection.
I've got so many more questions, but I want to be cognizant of time. But I want to ask this one, and we may not get to one of these areas that I want to talk about, but that's okay. Is as you're talking about it, I start thinking like, oh yeah, like I should like go and like talk to people, step in their office, give them a call just to check in. Like that's how you create connection. You know, I should have other team members do that. I feel that there is also a challenge that happens in companies as you grow, right? Because I think about when we were 8 people, we're now 100 people, right? When we were 8 people, it was easier to be connected. Like we all knew what everybody was doing. At 100, it's like impossible. And so at each stage of a business trajectory, the way that you connect or the way that you create connection needs to be different. I'm curious if you found anything in your research about how growing companies need to evolve their connection, how it goes from being a startup, young, small company to being like Walmart in creating connection. Like along that way, how does someone like a leader need to think about ensuring connection continues as growth ensues as well?
Yeah, that's tricky. And it's going to be different for every organization, but a couple examples came to mind. And one of the examples companies we profile in the book is a company called Automattic. So they're the group behind WordPress, which I think over half the internet is based, or, you know, the websites are used WordPress. And they have a large 1,000+ organization, and they're fully dispersed. So no, they don't have a physical location. There's 1,000+ employees all around the world. And the way they cultivate connection is one full week for every year, they bring everyone together. And the whole goal is to cement relationships, connect, converse, build rapport, make sure everyone's aligned with the vision of the organization. And they do it for 1 week. And for them, that enables them to work fully remote. And they see those connections and those conversations streamlined following that event. Another good example, a client of ours is Home Depot. And of course, being in Atlanta, we got to give Home Depot a shout. But one of the ways they do that is they've actually built it into their physical infrastructure. So they have I forget what it is. It's like a main avenue. It's like a street name they have in their headquarters there. And you can go and you can walk and you can see the history of Home Depot. And there's all these different points of interaction for you to kind of really get connected to the culture and the history of that organization. Then everyone gets an orange apron. They get a book that Arthur Blank wrote. And so they're constantly just stoking the history and the values of that organization for folks to really get connected. So there's a lot of creative ways to do that. But to your point, Matt, no doubt, as things grow, right, as your networks grow and more people get involved, it takes that much more intentionality to step in and create those points of connection.
Yeah, the word that stuck out right there at the end was intentionality, right? Mm. Connection comes from intentionality. And that's ultimately becomes the leader's job, is to have that intention to create connection amongst the team. And maybe not directly with them, but with the organization and with the team members. And from that standpoint, we didn't get to connection inhibitors. And it's something that we talked about in the book. And so that means that we definitely have to have you back on, because there's so much other that I wanted to get to. I think that this aspect is such an important part of, to your point, you know, you can see a bleeding wound and why they can't do their business. But mental health is impactful to your team members and your employees doing the job that they are meant to do. And it's impactful. So it's worthy of solving. Before I let you go, I need to ask the two questions that I ask all my guests. And the first is, I'm curious. I love to learn from people smarter than me. I love to do so via reading. You're much smarter than I ever will be. And so I like to learn from you. Is what is one book you think everybody should read or reread if they've already read it before?
The book I just read and loved, it's called From Strength to Strength by Arthur Brooks. It was a number one New York Times bestseller. And I loved it. So I'd highly recommend it for anybody. Check it out.
I love that. Arthur Brooks, I've watched a lot of his videos, read a lot of his blogs. His stuff is great. The last question is I know we talked about a lot here, and there's some stuff that we may not have talked about that's in the book Connectable, which you can get, I think, across all the retailers as well. is what's one actionable takeaway you hope that people can take from this podcast, or this conversation, whether it's talked about or not talked about, that they can implement today or tomorrow and be better for and of?
Maybe not an action step, but maybe it's a big reminder. And whether you know it or not, humanity, we have a very unique biological feature that is a stark reminder that you and I need connection. And that biological feature is the sclera. And sclera is the whites of our eyes. So I don't know if you've ever thought about this, but humans are the only animal on the planet that have highly pronounced sclera. Of course, horses, dogs, these other animals have it, but it's not as pronounced as humans. And why is that? Because if you think about it, having pronounced sclera, being able to tell our you know, someone that's trying to eat us or a predator where we're going to escape or what food we're looking at is not an evolutionary benefit. So your biology or creator, whichever one you subscribe to, put a bet on your safety and well-being on connection and doing that through sclera. So the reason you and I are able to connect is with looking at each other in the eye and be able to give our full presence and attention. And again, we just can't do that in the digital world. So getting offline and getting online with each other and spending precious amounts of time and giving your precious attention to someone else using your sclera is a win for all of us. And so stay connectable, everybody.
That's unbelievable. I love that. Ryan Jenkins, I super appreciate your time here. This has been an amazing conversation. Thank you for sharing the insight. I'm a fan, I'm a believer, and I'm going to continue to follow you. And I know that there's other people that are going to want to continue to follow you, maybe have you speak at their organization or conference or whatever it may be. So what's the best way for people to continue to follow your journey and get in touch with you that way?
Yeah, just visit ryanjenkins.com. That's the mothership, ryanjenkins.com, and probably most active on LinkedIn. So you can find me there as well.
Ryan, thanks so much again, man. And thanks for everything you're doing and all the research, and looking forward to having you back on the podcast here soon. So stay well, be well, and talk with you soon, my friend.
Thanks, Matt. Appreciate it. Cheers.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of Bridging the Gap. Don't forget to give us a rating and let us know what you think.